Welcome to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. I'm Carol Olson, your host. Women in Politics. It's a platform to bring women together to talk about their engagement in politics, what's important to them in our community, and what they want our representatives and delegates to hear. And today's guest, I have with me Jessica David, who is the field director of the Virginia House of Democrats, and Katie Baker, who is the communications director for the Democratic Party of Virginia and the Virginia House Democrats. Thanks so much for coming in.
We're delighted to be here.
Yeah.
So first, tell everybody a little bit about yourselves and how you got involved in the party.
Sure. Well, I had a bit of a convoluted path before I entered the campaign world. I'd always been really engaged in politics growing up, ever since I was a small child in Ohio. My dad was actually our local elected county prosecutor. So when I was growing up, from the time I was in elementary school, second, third grade, we were out knocking on doors for my dad. We were doing parades. We were going to the local Democratic events. So culturally, the Democratic Party was something that was ingrained into me from a very young age. And I always liked it. You know, I never was shy about knocking on doors and talking to strangers. You know, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact people are nice to kids when you go knock on doors. So that was always a bit in my blood. However, right out of college, I went to law school, and I really had the intention of becoming a lawyer. I wanted to work in policy. I wanted to write the laws to make change, to help people. And, you know, I graduated. I went here in Virginia at William & Mary, and I graduated in 2009, which was about the worst time for attorneys to try to enter the field. So I had a bit of difficulty breaking in. I wanted to go to Capitol Hill and try to find a job there. 2010, looking into 2010, was actually a difficult year to be looking for a job as well, after we lost a lot of seats in Congress late that year. So I taught for a year, and that was just a wonderful experience. You know, really honed my communication skills. I was teaching English and government to high school students, and I was really motivated by them and inspired by them every day. And that has shaped a lot of my career moving forward. And then just incidentally, I decided to expand my search to the campaign side, and I got my first political job, an entry-level job at a political organization back in 2011, and I never looked back. You'll find in campaigns, one job keeps leading to the next, and people help each other, and women help each other. And that's definitely the advice that I would offer to any listeners who are interested in, you know, potentially starting a career in campaigns, is network, reach out to people, and ask for help. That's something that most men don't have trouble doing. Women, I think, don't want to or tend not to want to inconvenience other people or ask for favors. But you really got to reach out, ask people for advice, ask people to pass on your resume. And that's really what I did. And now I try to pay it forward with people who are now reaching out to me and looking for help. So that's really how I got engaged in politics. And yeah, it's one of those things that's so addictive. And after every campaign, I've worked in, I think, 6 or 7 states now. After every campaign, I say, oh, I'm done. I'm too old for this. I just want to have a regular 9-to-5 job and stay in one place. But, you know, it's so addictive. And it's so exhilarating to feel, you know, that you're making a difference and that you're helping elect good Democrats who are going to fight for working people. And that's really why I've stayed in this.
And Jessica, what about you?
So my story is somewhat similar in that my parents were super involved local Democrats. And, you know, I knocked my first door at 6 years old and I've never skipped a cycle. Something I've always enjoyed, but it's also something I never thought I could make a career doing. And it wasn't until my senior year of college where I, like Katie, was thinking about law school. The summer before my senior year, I stumbled upon a field organizing job for my local congressman. And I just took to it like a duck to water, and I loved it. And, you know, it's 6 years later, and I can't believe I ever thought about doing anything else. I love waking up every day and going to work. And, you know, I've held a lot of different jobs, but, you know, that fact has always remained the same. And I can't imagine leaving this life until that changes.
Yeah. And, you know, that made me think when you were saying that you can't imagine doing anything else. I'd be the first to tell you, I'm sure Jess would be the first to tell you, that campaigns are really hard. They're physically hard. They're emotionally hard. They're exhausting. I mean, 12, even 14-hour days are not uncommon. But every single day I wake up and I just love what I do. Like, no matter how hard I know the day is going to be ahead of me, no matter what challenges lie in front of me, I can't imagine doing anything else. But I feel so grateful to have found something where I love what I do every single day.
How receptive is the political world to women?
Well, I know in my experience in field, it's definitely a male-dominated area of politics. It tends to not be something that there's a lot of women who do. But I have to say the men and women who have mentored me through the years have been incredible. I've never felt like my gender has gotten in the way. I've never felt like I was treated differently or excluded from anything that my male counterparts were. And I think that's really something great about Democratic politics, is that there really is this sense of equality. And, you know, I've never felt different because I'm a woman, even though many of the people who do what I do are men.
Yeah. No, I definitely would agree with that. You know, campaigns, even Democratic campaigns, I think are very male dominated in terms of the people who are drawn to them. And I think it's a bit of a self-selecting field. You know, I had a friend who told me she went to a campaign manager training in D.C. and she is a woman of color, and she walked in and it was a bunch of guys. But I think that's largely self-selecting. And I think that we definitely need more women out there, you know, who want to get involved and want to get engaged.
You're listening to Women in Politics, recorded in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM. Welcome back to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond's Independent Radio.
I do want to say I think Virginia has done a tremendous job compared to a lot of other states that I've worked in terms of getting more women in leadership roles in the party. So here in Virginia, we have a Democratic chairwoman of our party, Susan Swecker, who's from Highland County. I'm sure she'd be happy to join you soon and looking forward to that on this show. We have a Democratic executive director of the party, Becca Slutsky. I'm the communications director of the party. Our operations director is a woman. So we definitely have many women at the party in leadership roles. And at the House Caucus, you know, I also serve, I wear two hats. I also do communications for the House Democratic Caucus, which is a separate entity dedicated to electing Democrats to the House of Delegates. You know, I'm the communications director. And then Jessica, my colleague's, you know, the field director. And we also have our caucus chair, Sharnel Herring, is a woman of color, and is in a you know, very high leadership role, you know, in the caucus. So I really do want to highlight Virginia's efforts to put women in leadership roles at the party. And we definitely have, I think, roughly one-third of our caucus are women in the House of Delegates. We are always looking to hire more or elect more women. The good news is that more than half of our candidate, and we have an unprecedented number of candidates running for House of Delegates, are women. And we're looking forward to talking about them in a little bit. But just going back in terms of the staff level, you know, in terms of it being self-selecting, you know, campaigns are a hard life. You have to move a lot. And, you know, there's not as much economic security in that you know, often change jobs after every campaign cycle. And, you know, if you want to have a family, you know, that can be, you know, challenging when you're working the campaign lifestyle. So, you know, I definitely think that we always have to be proactively thinking about how can we get more women in leadership roles on campaigns and running for office. And again, I really just want to highlight everything that Virginia has done in order to bring more women into the fold. I will say, I do want to echo what Jessica was saying about definitely feeling that there is a place for women on campaigns in terms of being treated with equality by our male counterparts. You know, certainly, you know, if anything, campaigns are looking to hire more women, you know, and when they get, I mean, I've put out, you know, job postings where I'll have, you know, for press assistants, where I'll have, I'd say maybe one out of every 10 applications are women, and nine are men. So that's what I'm saying in terms of the field being self-selecting. But I, you know, definitely campaigns are very cognizant of trying to get more women and people of color on staff. And that's, you know, certainly something that they're trying to do. I will say the one disadvantage, you know, I have felt, and that's been more on me and that I need to develop, or, and I have gotten a lot better about this. I'm 34, so I feel like it comes with age. But, you know, when I was initially involved in campaigns, you know, I found that, and I think many women are like this too, like I didn't always want to advocate for myself, or I was sometimes afraid of sharing my view at a big staff meeting. And not that I thought that it would be dismissed. I think it was just an inherent, you know, sort of nervousness and hesitation that I had that, oh, what if what I'm about to say is a bad idea? Or it was really just a product of my own self-consciousness. And we need more women at the table. And I found that once I did find the courage to you know, sit at the table and speak up, I was heard. But you have to do that because, you know, no matter how sensitive, you know, to women's issues the men at the table are, nobody's going to have the perspective that you do. And that's what's really so key about not being afraid to speak up and to share your perspective, you know, and that's how you get to senior, you know, roles, you know, as Jessica and I have. So that's definitely advice I would give. You know, and I think the other thing, too, that, you know, I think women tend to think more about, you know, the good of the team rather than looking for credit for themselves. And I think this is more implicit. Like, I think men, you know, generally don't hesitate as much, you know, to seek credit. And this isn't specific to campaigns, but don't hesitate to say, you know, hey, I did this. And not in a way that's necessarily, you know, arrogant, you know, or anything negative. But I think that we, as women, do need to be more conscious of, you know, and maybe it doesn't come naturally to highlight, hey, like, I did a really good job on this project, or hey, you know, I got this media hit, or, but I think that we do need to think more about how to highlight our work so that we are always showing our value. And, you know, I mean, one way, and I think I actually read women in the Obama administration did this, is that
amplify.
They would, yeah, amplify, and they would echo other women in the room, you know, so that their ideas weren't being lost. And, you know, my colleague, I have another colleague in the communications shop, Christina. And, you know, I think that, you know, neither one of us is really looking for credit in terms of the work that we do, but we're both really quick to give credit to each other and to say, hey, you know, Christina did this, or hey, Katie did this. And I think that's really important that we do that for each other, because I just don't think we're inclined to do that for ourselves.
You're listening to Women in Politics, recorded in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM. Welcome back to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio. And also I'm wondering, because while we have more candidates now, and there's certainly a huge push, especially from agencies like Emerge Virginia, trying to get women trained and into politics, they still represent a minority in elected officials currently. And do you think that that aspect of not having as many female role models for women who are interested in politics to go forth and think that I can be that person too?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that's self-perpetuating, you know, and that's why it's so important, you know, that we do have women step up. And it is intimidating. I mean, there are times, you know, when I've been on campaigns, you know, in different states where I realize, oh, I'm on a senior call with six people and I'm the only woman on the phone and everybody else has a different opinion than what I do, you know. And I found that once I actually have found my voice and I'm able to state my opinion, it's respected and encouraged. But, you know, I mean, I'm a pretty outgoing person. I mean, I even had that initial hesitation, you know, when I first got involved in campaigns. So I do think that's really, really key that we elect more women. And again, like, I really want to speak, you know, to our caucus for really working to recruit so many female candidates. And, you know, if you look at, there was just really striking image of the two caucus pictures from this legislative session. There was a picture of all the members of the House Democratic Caucus, and then there was a separate picture of all the members of the House Republican Caucus. And in the picture of the House Democratic Caucus, which we actually have on our website, which is www.vahousedems.org, you know, it's the banner photo. You see a lot of diversity and you see a lot of women. And, you know, when I looked at this caucus picture from, you know, the Republicans, it was vast majority white men. I think they might have one person of color and I think two or three women in their caucus. I hope that's accurate. But or I hope what I'm saying is factually correct. You know, I certainly am perturbed by the lack of representation of women and people of color in that caucus. So I really think, you know, that speaks to the Democratic Party's, you know, commitment to inclusion and also that we fight for values that resonate with women. And I don't know if you wanted to add anything or not to that, Jess.
Yeah, I mean, I believe more than half of the candidates running on the Democratic ticket this year are women. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's an amazing thing. We have more than we could ever highlight on in this one bit. But, you know, there's some truly amazing women who have stories that are inspiring and that are different in a lot of ways from their male counterparts. And, you know, I think sometimes women bring a different perspective to things. And, you know, that voice just needs to be heard and it deserves to be heard. And, you know, I'm really glad that, you know, at least on our team that we are striving to get more women into power, to get more women into office, and to really amplify that voice.
How do you think local politics have evolved then to be more focused on women in regards to, say, equality or equity or other issues really salient to not only to women, but to families and what women are thinking are important in our community?
Well, you know, I think they've evolved a lot. And I don't think that the other issues, you know, that you mentioned are in any way, you know, mutually exclusive to women's issues. You know, equality is a value that we should be fighting for every person. So people of color, people from the LGBT community, you know, people from every socioeconomic status. So, you know, I mean, equal pay for equal work really speaks both to women's issues, but also to equality more broadly. So I try not to think of these issues, you know, sort of segmented into silos because, you know, and certainly women's issues are, if I had to identify one area that was most important to me in terms of why I get up and fight every day, like personally, I do care a lot about women's issues. But that said, I think that they've evolved a lot where we've seen, you know, that women are stronger, families are stronger, and our economy is stronger. You know, it's really important that we achieve true equal pay for equal work. You know, I believe the current figure is 79 cents per dollar that women are still making compared to men. And that's atrocious. Like, you know, I can't believe in the 21st century, you know, Jess and I were just talking before this. It's been almost 100 years since we've secured the right nationally to vote, you know, that you still have that kind of pay discrepancy. And in fact, just this legislative session, one of our delegates, Jennifer Boysko from Northern Virginia, introduced a bill that would help really create an accountability system within the government to make sure that female government employees were actually being paid comparably to their male counterparts, you know, to actually put into place a system. You know, that was a bill that was killed, you know, in a Republican-controlled subcommittee. And, you know, that's just really, you know, unfortunate that in this day and age, we can't even pass, you know, equal pay for equal work. But at the same time, like, those issues are really resonating with people and people are holding their representatives accountable for those votes. Paid family leave. I mean, paid family leave is a big issue that we're hearing a lot about. You know, people shouldn't have to choose between a paycheck and being able to take care of their kids or a sick relative. And that's something that benefits both women and men. And in fact, we had a male legislator, Mark Levine from Northern Virginia, introduced a piece of legislation this session that would have instituted a paid family leave program in Virginia. You know, that's another thing that was killed in an unrecorded voice vote this legislative session. Choice is a really important issue, you know, both for women and for men more generally. And, you know, because choice is often an economic issue affecting families as a whole if you don't have autonomy over when you have children.
You're listening to Women in Politics, recorded in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM. Welcome back to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIRLP 97.3 FM, Richmond's independent radio.
And, you know, this legislative session, we saw, you know, there was a Republican delegate who introduced a 20-week abortion ban. The House of Delegates passed, because it's Republican-controlled, a resolution creating a day of tears, or recognizing the anniversary of Roe v. Wade as a day of tears. No purpose, you know, other than to shame, you know, women. And that has broad implications for women across all of Virginia when that is the sentiment of their legislators. And, you know, fortunately, we've had Governor
Governor Terry McAuliffe, who has been a brick wall defending women on all these really bad pieces of legislation meant to take away the reproductive autonomy of women. And we've had Democrats in the House of Delegates who have been able to stand up and sustain his vetoes. We have 34 Democrats currently in the House of Delegates, which is just what we need in order to sustain vetoes. But we need more. That's why it's so critical that we need more. And, I can't really harp on that enough. If one person had been sick or a couple people had been sick, I mean, the Republicans tried to, they passed a bill this legislative session to defund Planned Parenthood. And Governor McAuliffe vetoed it accordingly. And they brought it back up because they thought they had the votes. They didn't count right, but they thought they had the votes that day to override it. And fortunately, we were able to sustain that veto because we stood together and we did have the numbers that day. But that's really how close it comes when you don't have enough Democrats in the House of Delegates to protect our governor. And that's also why it's so important that we reelect a Democratic governor who is really going to stand up and fight for women's issues, because, it's certainly not going to happen at the federal level when we have, this trifecta of President Trump and two chambers of Republican-controlled Congress. If there's anything, Jess, you wanted to add to that?
No, not really. But, I think it's definitely something that you have to think about when we are this close to being able to lose our veto or lose our override. It shouldn't come down to, women's rights are hanging on such a thread that if one person gets the flu, everything could change. That's crazy.
That's terrifying. Yeah.
I don't think anyone would want their civil liberties or the things that they care about to be, hanging in such a balance.
Is there common ground between the Democratic Party or women who are Democrats and the other parties, Republicans, Independents, Green Party? Are there issues that women in particular or marginalized groups in particular can come together on?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that, some of the core issues we just talked about, choice, paid family leave, equal pay for equal work. I mean, those are things that should resonate, I think, broadly across the board. I don't know offhand of any Republican woman who's going to say, I don't want to be paid equally to my male, counterpart because of implicit bias or in some cases, explicit bias. So I definitely think that those, issues, resonate to all women. And, again, I mean, that's why we're so excited about all the great candidates that we have running for the House of Delegates this year, because we've seen this unprecedented number of people who are stepping up and they're appealing across party lines to people talking about core economic issues that affect women and families. And I think that we're going to draw in a lot of Republican support, a lot of independent and Green Party support, by talking about issues like paid family leave, like raising the minimum wage, that are going to, resonate with people, regardless of party, hopefully, in most cases.
Who are the candidates that are up and coming that people should be learning about?
Sure. I think there's, one in particular, Kathleen Murphy up in Northern Virginia, who is going to have a tough re-election fight. And, she's been a great champion for women and for women's issues. And, I think she's someone that's definitely worth looking at. So we have some primaries that are woman v. woman. And, for example, in the 42nd and in the 31st, which are both in Northern Virginia, where there's two women who are amazing and who have great stories. And I think we're lucky to have either one of them. Wendy Gooditis in the 10th, that's also Northern Virginia. Also Cheryl Turpin in the 85th, which is Virginia Beach. Cheryl is a science teacher, which I think is a really amazing background to bring to Richmond. Science and teacher are two words we don't talk about enough and two words that we should spend more time caring about and legislating about.
No, as of today, I believe we're running candidates in 87 of 100 House districts, which includes our Democratic incumbents. More than half of those candidates are women, or at least of the candidates running for open seats or seats currently held by Republicans. A few other Richmond area candidates that I wanted to highlight, we have Delegate Dolores McQuinn has done a lot of great work. Particularly, she passed a bill this legislative session that would put African-American, historically African-American cemeteries to be treated on the same level when it came to getting state funding as Confederate cemeteries. So I think that's an important part of our history, to be able to honor those, you know, historically Black cemeteries. So we also have here in the Richmond area, Deborah Rodman. She's a professor at Randolph-Macon. She has a background actually in anthropology and women's studies. I believe she's the head of the women's studies department at Randolph-Macon, but she is a great candidate. You know, she's a nominee in that district, which is the 73rd, I believe, which is a Richmond area seat. She's running against Delegate John O'Bannon, and I think that Deborah Rodman would just be, you know, such an amazing replacement for him, and somebody who is really going to fight for women's issues. We've got women running in rural Virginia. We have young women running.
Yeah.
Stephanie Cook is running out in rural Virginia. She's a young woman. I think she told me she had her baby, I want to say it was right around the time that Donald Trump was elected. And I think that was part of what drove her to get involved in politics, which is something that she, you know, never thought she'd do. You know, Kathy Tran has a baby too.
Yeah,
you know, I'm just thinking of some of the women. It was interesting at our candidates training. We saw, I think at least two women had babies there. And I thought that was just such a breath of fresh air, you know, to see that, you know, we're going to welcome women, you know, if we need to make accommodations, that's what we're going to do, because that's how we get more women to be involved. And also, you know, since we don't endorse in primaries, I also want to give a shout out to the other woman who is running in Kathy's district, Tilly Blanding, great candidate as well. She's a woman of color. Both candidates in that district we were just talking are women of color. And I think that's another thing, you know, that we've done a better job of this year is, you know, really actively recruiting not just women but also people of color. And I think maybe roughly a third of our candidates are people of color, and I know we have at least six candidates who have self-identified as LGBTQ. So when we're fighting for women's issues, you know, we also, I think, as women should proactively think about other groups that have been marginalized: people of color, people from the LGBT community. And so that's something that we're definitely really sensitive to in our caucus as well.
This ends the first part of our interview. Tune in next week for part two. You've been listening to Women in Politics, recorded here in the studios of WRIR-LP 97.3 FM. To hear this show, please go to our blog at womenpoliticsva.blog. To support independent radio, to learn, volunteer, or donate, please go to WRIR.org.